I don't know, because when I met her, she was very reserved, very quiet. And she appears to be that way too. It's just like kind of Michael Jackson-ish, like very soft spoken, but then, when he got on stage, he became someone else. I think that's more of her thing. I think she's like a shy, introverted person. But when I was around her, like I didn't know. And there's that information out there as well, about Rihanna and about the publicity stunt, because I was supposed to fall on the sword completely and say that, that I didn't even know her, that I never even worked on the project, but it was too far out there and it was too far known that, and it just like it was so sloppy, it fell apart, because people have known, since 2005. Especially like the industry people in the media have covered Rihanna at the beginning of her career because I was involved, right? So as far as if she's changed, I really don't know, because I don't talk to her anymore. I don't have any dealings with her. I don't know, but she seems to be the same person as far as like, very shy, very it's kind of staying, even though she's in the limelight constantly, you don't see interviews from her or anything like that much,
Yeah. The only reason I ask is because I see Rihanna using the same symbolism as Jay-Z. I see her, partaking in like that same kind of lifestyle. And now there's even rumors that she might have been one of Diddy's, victims, or might have been at one of Diddy's parties. And there is photos of Rihanna at what appears to be a Diddy party, but I'm not saying it's confirmed or not. It's just I
Right.
want to know if, like, when you met her, did she look like this regular girl? This, there's just like there was nothing crazy about her, but like, because if you look at her today, you can see that there she's definitely down with the industry at this point,
Correct.
So would you say that when you first met her, would you say that they developed her into what she is today?
I just honestly, I don't know. Like my experiences with Rihanna has been nothing but very, very positive. And she seems like a very wonderful person. I really don't know. I've also seen some of the symbolism that you're talking about, but like I said, a lot of these things are so manipulative. It's like you get it like a rack of all these different clothes, and it's like, hey, try one of these for the photo shoot, or photographer will suggest, and you don't even realize what you're putting on. You don't even realize that maybe sometimes it contains a symbolism until afterwards, until people break it down. So I don't know, man. I like to think of her as somebody who is just a good person, and I think maybe she's changing to more independent, away from the industry, and just really focusing on her family.
Fair enough. At the end of the day, I feel that Rihanna might be involved in some of the industry activities. I know that she's not the one that does the treatment for her music videos, but there's even a music video where she's dancing in front of a projector screen, and behind the projector screen, they literally flash the princess of the Illuminati. So it's just things like that that makes me question
Right.
these artists. And if, for example, I'll ask you this question. You are an artist right now. I sign you to a record deal, right? And you're just doing what you do. You put on the clothes, you record the song, you shoot the music video, and then you watch the music video over, and they add Masonic imagery or occult imagery in there, and they're making you appear as satanic. Would you just go along with it, or are you going to stand up and say something? At what point is it you standing up to it, or you just going with the flow? Do you understand what I'm saying?
I think it's both. You kind of go with the flow, and then maybe you question it, and then you think these people are your friends. No, it's not that. It's really about this, and it's really about that. It's so manipulative, and it's so hidden. It's such a shady business, But all that honestly from her, all that comes from Jay-Z. Jay-Z's such into witchcraft and such into symbolism that it's just crazy. And I think that's his influence. That's his input into her career.
And I agree, because she was only 16, but like that's what I'm trying to say. At what point do you stand up and say, I'm not doing that, I'm not comfortable with that, I'm not a Satanist?
Right. I don't know. I don't know. I think, man, like I said, like it's so highly manipulative. And even if she did say that, I'm sure he's got a response.
Okay. You know, and I'm not trying to push on you, you know,
No, I understand totally.
I dig for the truth, and I don't have emotions when it comes to finding out the truth. That's why I feel I don't attach myself. The truth Correct. Is the truth. I don't like anybody. I don't like any artist. I don't have any love for any artist. I love humans. I love people. I love everyone. And no one gets away with it in my eyes. If you are involved, I'm going to call you out. And if you want to clear things up, you have a million times bigger platform than me. And yeah. I've already had issues with Kanye West in the past. Early on my YouTube career, I exposed the same imagery and the same things about Kanye West. And I got a manual copyright strike from his team. It was literally his record label listed. It wasn't a content ID, which is what literally happens when you use someone's music video or something. This right. was someone on his team. The same thing happened to me when I spoke about Tupac. I had a manual takedown, and it was the craziest thing because it was from the man who took Tupac's last photo, which I don't even understand how he managed to see. The video had like 60 or 50,000 views, and he apparently saw the video and it listed his name. I looked him up. It was the man who took the last photo of Tupac in the car with Suge Knight. So I got a copyright strike for that. You know, I feel that I'm going to call out the truth, you know, what I believe is the truth, no matter what the cost is. Right. I comprehend that you have a relationship with Rihanna, and you didn't see anything like that. So I respect that. And we can move on to the next question. While you were in the industry, nothing like this ever happened to you before? A different artist that didn't like something you said about them, a story you ran about them?
Never.
When Jay-Z, when you had said that about Jay-Z and Rihanna, they didn't try to threaten you or reach out to you attacking manner?
No, I was part of the team.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, because you were working for Rihanna. Rihanna was signed to Jay-Z.
I was working for her team. Yeah, I was working for her team.
They didn't like the fact that...
Not for her direct, for her team.
Yeah, I get it. Because you weren't... The artist isn't hiring you. The team is hiring you as a publicist to work on articles and stuff like that.
Correct.
So you saying that Jay-Z's... When they reached out to you, they told you they were going to compensate you in whatever way, you know. And you were to report that you started the rumor and that it was a lie.
Correct. 10 years later, afterwards, after that we had put it out, after we had came out, you know, with our marketing plan for Pond to Replay, 10 years later, when the book dropped, the Becoming Beyonce book, and they found out that I was in the chapters. I didn't know I was going to be in the chapters until the book dropped. Right. Then the book dropped, and all of a sudden I start getting contacted about, you know, to speak on what happened. I think it was on Wendy Williams, the author went on, was maybe the first one. And then that exploded then back in 2015 while I was working with Tidal, helping them launch and helping them do publicity for their app against Spotify. That when I was working with them, the head of Roc Nation contacted me and wanted me to fall on the sword, go on television. It wasn't an artist that I was working with on Tidal. It was like Tidal had made me like, I don't know, like the producer's corner. They were going to like every release that I did that they would promote. You know, they really believed in Tidal because that's like Tidal's one of Jay-Z's biggest failures, like, as you know. Like that, and so everybody just thought that Tidal would take over Spotify because he had Madonna and Kanye and Rihanna and Nicki Minaj and everybody and Beyonce, and it still didn't like resonate as much as it should with people. So I was promised like all these things that Tidal would do, you know, for me. And I was like believing that, you know, Tidal would take down Spotify and Tidal would take down Apple, because who can stop all those that amount of people who are supporting it? And it just didn't stick. And they didn't do anything that they said.
They were the ones that made you go on Inside Edition?
Correct.
They got that for you? They set that up?
Correct.
Yeah, that's interesting, man. So I want people to realize, because essentially, I'm not saying you're saying it, but I'm saying it. If they made you cover this up, they essentially made you cover up a crime that Jay-Z allegedly hooked up with Rihanna, who was only 16. Now, I also read that the police were reaching out to you at a certain point about this?
That's correct. And to that, but that was in 2005.
When it first happened.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you obviously, you denied it.
Yeah, I was so freaked out. You know, that was 20 years ago, right? So I'm in my 20s and like, we're just like starting. And the guy that I was with, you know, his name is William. We were in Florida. He was like an intern with me. We're just chilling in Florida and Kissimmee, like in between Kissimmee and Orlando. And we're pulled over, you know, by these unmarked cars, and we're taken into this interrogation room over by the Kissimmee Library. And he was like freaking out, like, we're going to jail, we're going to jail. And I was like nervous, but I'm like, no, bro, we're fine. Like, there's nothing to worry about. And when I was interrogated, like in that room, I started to get nervous. Like, wait a minute, like, what's happening here, right? Because I've never been in a situation where like I'm interrogated, especially by, you know, Homeland Security and the feds or the task force. I think it's what they were for Jay-Z, because the rap artists back in the day used to have those task force that they used to always talk about. So whatever this was, these government officials, whether it was a task force, looking into all the businesses of Jay-Z, you know, they came to me and asked me about my involvement. What did I know? Did I know about him and Tierra Marie, Foxy Brown, Rihanna, like all those people? And you know, at the time I didn't. And it was crazy to go through that. And then, they were investigating him for the stabbing of Lansom Rivera and the criminal complaints about R. Kelly. And you got to think, a man of that stature, you know, that's 20 years ago for Jay-Z as well. So he was a much different person then. So probably all the things that have been reported on Jay-Z then, 20 years ago, by various people, you know, this is a guy who came out openly and talks about, you know, dealing drugs and keys and everything else. Like, why wouldn't the police be tracking him nonstop? Right. Definitely. This is a guy who's openly saying that, you know, he is still into the drug business. Right. And back then, he could say that's just art. But yeah, when we were stopped by the feds and they questioned us about that, I mean, I didn't know, you know, I was like, it shook me to the core, because I was like, oh my gosh, you know. And then it dies down, nothing happens. And then the book came out, The Becoming Beyonce, in 2015 that I'm in. And that brought it all back up, you know, because here's the thing too, is like, if you look at my past, I've never done interviews. Like my first one was with like Tisa Tells, which Jaguar saw. And then, you know, and then I did hers, and then I did yours, and then I did other ones. Before then, this has like never been my thing, is like doing interviews like this. You understand? Like I might have two out there, and like my whole 20 years, I've been very, very, very behind the scenes. So me coming out and speaking like this is a very new thing. From seeing some people like Jaguar, right, you know, to come out and to speak, just makes me feel like I have a responsibility to the public as well to share the story and hopefully help some people out there. Because like, as I said earlier, the victims and the people that are hurting that have reached out to me, like maybe that's what God has me doing here, is just helping people and giving someone, you know, a security blanket, so to speak, to be able to speak about what they've been through.
Yeah, you know, it starts with someone. Someone has to lay the foundation down. And mm-hmm. if you're basically, like you're basically doing now, you're calling out, you're backing up Jaguar Wright's claims. You're saying that Jaguar Wright isn't lying about Jay-Z, or, you know, at least you believe some of the things she says regarding Jay-Z. Because I know we can't prove everything Jaguar states, because it's impossible unless you have insider information or unless you were there. But you could at least take her word and do an investigation and see what else you find. That's correct. How I like to look at it.
Oh, and that's the thing, is like, when you think about Kanye, he got his start with Jay-Z.
Yeah.
Right. And Jay-Z is best friends. He was best friends with Biggie, and Biggie's best friends with Diddy. And it just goes back to those, it always goes back to those people, Jay-Z and Diddy. And one of those people is in custody in Brooklyn right now.
Yeah.
And the other is people are thinking that he will be next, you know, and I don't think there's a question that he'll be next. I think that just the stuff that I've got from people, not only what I've witnessed and not only what I've heard from being involved in the corner, being involved in those circles, like being involved with Jay-Z's biggest artist, Rihanna. Well, Kanye would be, but I've also been involved with him and being involved with Tidal, being involved with Roc Nation, being involved with Tidal. For me to hear all the stories then throughout the years and witness some of the stuff that I have, but now hear from these victims and people that Jay-Z, that they claim has hurt, is just so overwhelming that how could you not believe it? It's not like him, it's not like Jay-Z and Diddy aren't related. Like, these guys are friends. They are business partners. At every Roc Nation and Diddy party before the freak-offs, when it was just Diddy's birthdays, you see him and Jay-Z together. So why wouldn't Jay-Z and Diddy practice the same thing? Like, what each other's doing? They're the same people, right? And so is Biggie's son. You know, like, once again, that I had a contract with the Notorious Big Estate. He's corrupt too. They're all so corrupt and they're all tied in together. For Kanye, it breaks my heart, because I thought that he was out of it with the Jesus is King. I was like, yes, this is unbelievable, you know, and seeing him speak out at, like, you know, about Christianity, about God, and, you know, him not having, you know, any cuss words. And now all of a sudden it seems like he's back to that time. Is that really hurts, because, you know, the thing about God is he will forgive you. And I just felt like we were going to see Kanye just become a major Christian artist. And it just hurts to see him backslide.
Now, see, me, I've been very vocal the entire time with the Kanye and the, you know, the right. Christian areas, Christian era, what I call it, but I never bought into it. And the reason why I say this is because I don't judge off of what a person says. I judge off of what a person does. And Kanye never stopped using occult symbolism. Kanye also, there was, academics said this himself, that the whole entire time that he was recording these so-called gospel artists, it was rumored that he had orgies in the studio with multiple women. Now,
oh wow,
this on top of the fact that Kanye also admitted that he sacrificed his mother. This is not my words. These are his own words that came out of his own mouth. You can look this up.
My mom ain't here. My mama was sacrificed.
Me too.
You understand?
Yeah.
He also admitted that, you know, through symbolism, that he's a part of the same kind of club. But I agree with you 1,000%. God can get you out of anything. So I wouldn't be surprised if God got Kanye out of this situation, but I don't think it was genuine. I think that Kanye was trying to play God and he succeeded. It seemed like he was having people worship him. If we go to his church services at the beginning, at least before he came out with the gospel album, he was just he was singing his songs in a church. He wasn't singing a song from the heart to God. He was singing his own music that he already had previously made, changed a few words, and was singing it at church. And that was supposed to be a church service. But I felt that it was more centered on worshiping him. He was at the center of it. He was raising his hands, collecting all this energy. You got to remember that, like you said, a lot of this is frequencies. A lot of this is energy. A lot of this is more than what meets the eye. So that whole entire era, a lot of people say Kanye is a clone, Kanye this. I don't believe none of that. I believe that Kanye proved that he is seen as a God on earth. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's what he proved. He proved that he can convince all of you to go, not you necessarily, but the masses, to go to his church and worship him. Because realistically, you don't go to an artist for that kind of relationship with God. That you can go, you can listen to gospel music, but your relationship with God comes from within you. You know, that comes, right. That's a personal relationship. And Kanye's music isn't gonna, you know, some people might say it helped them. Some people might say it helped them closer to God. But in my opinion, it was just an act. And the fact that the way he reacted afterwards, like you said, it seemed like he backslid. But the thing is, it's just what he's been doing the whole time. There's an interview where he just recently did. He said that he no longer prays to God to help him. God didn't get him out of anything. He did that. He is his own God. This is 2023 or 2024.
Right now, are you in that space where you're comfortable enough to say, this is where I am right now? I'm still a man of God. Jesus still is king, but this is vultures right now. This is where I am.
Yes, but I have my issues with Jesus. There's a lot of stuff I went through. But I prayed and I didn't see Jesus show up. So I had to put my experience in this world, my experience with my children, my experience with other people, my experience with my account, my experience with my brand, and my experience with the level of music that I was dealing with in my own hands. So I'd be surprised that I'm still alive every day.
How did you not so-called disappear? Like, because that's a hell of a fight.
Because I'm God.
Because I'm God.
Anyone to disagree, I'm the God of me. You can't tell me who I am. I can't tell y'all. I could tell y'all. It's y'all's job to listen. I'm the God of me. I don't know if I'm in heaven already and shit. I got number one. Paul, you know, I might be on like a fourth dimension version of the lifestyle. You know, I don't know. I must have died in this accident.
Right.
Recently came out of his mouth. And that's the same mentality. If we go back to Thelema, Thelema teaches do what thou will and that you are your own God. You are the master of your will. You understand? You're the one that determines your will. And I feel that the Thelema has infected the entire music industry, not just hip hop. It was first in rock and roll. It was men like Ozzy Osbourne. I don't know if you heard of a rock band named Bohemoth. David Bowie. These are all people that I have 100% confirmed were followers of Aleister Crowley. And they put this in their music. And Kanye West has also done the same thing. If anything else you want to add, anything else that you want to say before we go?
Well, so listen, with that being said, that was the disappointing thing in RZA. Because I worked with RZA. I used to work with the company. This will be the last thing. It was called Rings and Partners Entertainment. And it's owned by this rapper named Civil Rings, whose real name is Tariq. And Tariq is the guy who did the Once Upon a Time in Shaolin with RZA, that album that's been a lot of controversy because there was only one made by the drug guy. And, you know, it's been museums now and blah, 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 blah. But anyway, Civil Rings, Rings and Partners Entertainment, that's who I was able to get contact through RZA. And there used to be this magazine called Scratch Magazine. And Scratch Magazine was a producer's magazine back in the day. It was by Harris Publications that did XXL. And it was like the greatest magazine. They covered like Dr. Dre and RZA and all the producers. And so we did a cover story for RZA, and it was done with this guy named Carl Cherry, who's now like
Apple or Spotify.
Yeah, and Jesus Trevino was the writer, and it was on RZA. So when we went to the studio, and I was with RZA, and I think he was doing like Kill Bill. He was doing some kind of score, some kind of soundtracks. Maybe it was right after Kill Bill, but I think it was Kill Bill. I was really disappointed because like he was talking about like the Israelites religion, and he was talking about the five percenters, and he was talking about all these different things. And being like a white person, he was telling me all these things. I really respected it. And he had this other like pastor there that was with him, and he was vegan. And like I said, I've never even heard of it up until this point. RZA gave me the Apocrypha, you know, which is the Bible with the missing, you know it better, but it had the missing canon. So
yeah,
he was like explaining the Apocrypha, and he was like, he seemed very religious. Very like disciplined. So to see him 10 years later on One Shot, and to see him not want to do cocaine and suggesting that him and Sway Calloway and DJ Khaled don't do cocaine, so they have coke, you know, and then to go downstairs and RZA and Sway Calloway and DJ Khaled and the guy that was with DJ Khaled to go down and have their own gay orgy was so disappointing, because like I said, this is a guy who gave me the Apocrypha. This is a guy who I really looked up to, even whatever people feel about their own religions and stuff like that. This was a person that I really looked up to with the Wu-Tang Clan. And that's one of the reasons like I'm so bothered by it. And, you know, I just want to close, like, because a lot of people have hit me about, like, you know, like there's no way Sway Calloway and no way RZA. I would say the same thing being like a fan, but it did happen. They were in a game. King Tech was there, and so was Crooked Eye. You know, it goes by King Crooked, who's in Slaughterhouse, who's Joe Budden. Slaughterhouse was Joe Budden, Crooked Eye, Royce da 5'9", and Joel Ortiz. They were a group. Crooked Eye was like one of my best friends. He's been around my family. We've done a lot of projects together. He's also really, really close. He goes back even further with King Tech and Sway Calloway. Like, I wish Crooked Eye would confirm that all this did happen, because he was there listening to the orgy. He was there listening to them. You know, he knew what was going on, because he wouldn't even make eye contact with me, because, you know, it was such a startling moment. And these are pillars of hip hop that, you know, I was trying to look at him like, bro, like, what is this? You know, like, and texting him, and he wasn't even answering me. You could just tell he wanted it over with. You know, Crooked Eye did not participate at all in any of the in the orgy that was happening. So that was very, very disappointing, you know, about RZA so much and Sway, people that I really looked up to.
Not to cut you off though, real quick, because it's something important that you say, that you kept saying that they did it right there while you guys were in the area and it's close enough to hear them.
It's the house. I think they were downstairs.
I think they did that on purpose. I think that, like I was saying earlier,
That's what my ex said.
Yeah, I think that they were trying to see if you guys wanted to play ball. Not saying that they wanted to make sure that, number one, you're cool with it. Number two, this is what goes down. For example, real quick, actually the Wu-Tang. It was Inspector Deck that said this. Crunchy Black said a similar story, but Inspector Deck said, and this is even better because it connects right with RZA. Inspector Deck said that he was walking around in a party and he saw this activity, you know, guy on guy. And he said it was the biggest celebrities he knew. He was shocked. At the end, he said these people approached him to check his temperature, to check his energy, to see how was he going to react. Are you going to be down a party with us and come into these rooms? Or are you going to walk out the party and we know not to invite you again? You know, would you say that's something like, do you think that they were testing you right there? And King Crooked, is that his name? Crooked Eye? Yeah, right.
Well, I think that Crooked Eye, because he was just as traumatized as me, but he'd known them for like 30 years. Like Sway and King Tech, I put him on the wake up show. I think it's just one of those things that he's just ignored. Because, you know, Sway is very powerful. Tech is very powerful with Sirius XM and Shade 45, that he doesn't want to rattle any of that feathers, and he just wanted it over. But there's a story that came out in like 2016 that I left one shot to be with my adoptive family, to be reunited. I think I spoke about this in the last one. And I just had to get away like so fast. You know, and my ex at the time, she was saying those same things that you're saying, was like, they were wanting, you know, us to be involved or, you know, that type of thing. I was like, no, I didn't know what to think. I just wanted to get away as fast as possible. And that's why I left one shot, because it was so corrupt.
Did they at any point like come up to you and try to like see if you realized it? Or did they just go as normal, like nothing was going on?
That was the weirdest thing, because it just went on as normal. Nobody even talked about it.
Yeah, that's crazy. And like I said, it's not, I don't think that people want to say, oh, why do you have against gay? I don't have nothing against them. But when it's kind of being forced in the industry, like, oh, you don't have a choice. I don't think it's right for artists that are trying to make it, if they're straight and they're being forced to do things with someone like Diddy for a record contract. That's not something he did at free will. That's someone that's being taken advantage of. Someone that's, they're dangling their career, their success. Hey, you either got to do this or you're going to walk out of here with nothing. You understand what I'm saying? No one's going to believe them anyways. Who's going to believe it? Like, you were there. You were with them. You saw, you heard it. You experienced it. And there's still people saying, no, that's not true. You're just making this up. Why would you make this up? RZA isn't relevant right now to the moment. Sway isn't relevant right now to the moment. These are people from back in the day that no one even, DJ Khaled is most likely the most relevant person in this conversation, but he's not even, you know, I don't see you gaining anything from you making up this story. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, correct.
I believe you 100%. I don't think that you're, that there's no reason for you to lie about this. Now, if you were saying the same story about Drake, maybe some people, oh, he just hates Drake, so that's why he's making that up. But I don't, you're saying that you were fans of these people. You're saying correct. That you were hurt when you realized that they weren't who they claimed to be.
Correct. Especially somebody who gave me like the Apocrypha. And yeah. Especially someone who was very like preachy to me. And I looked up and we got him the Scratch magazine cover, you know, with Carl Cherry. And that's why I keep dropping these other names too, is because I would love to see these people speak out. I would love to see Crooked Eye, you know, speak out. I know he's upset with me, you know, I'm sure about saying these things, but nobody's came out and denied it. They've all seen these things. Nobody, you know, CJ Wallace hasn't came out and denied anything that I've said. You know, Crooked Eye hasn't came out and said, oh, he's not telling the truth. You know, that's why it's like, I want people to come out and say, this is wrong. This isn't what happened. You know, yada, yada, yada. Because it's all the truth.
With Biggie's son. So you're saying like he's a Diddy 2.0 essentially.
Yes.
What are some of the things that, since you worked with him, what are some of the things off the top of your head that you would say make him similar to Diddy that you've seen him do?
The drugs, the getting all the drugs for the parties during the pandemic. Okay. It's so crazy. Like, I was with my ex at the time that I told you she was doing the project with me, and she was a former stripper. She was a former dancer. And we were going to go to Diddy's party because we were invited with CJ and Willie Mack. And I, as a hip hop head, wanted to go, of course. And I wanted to strengthen our relationship with CJ Wallace and the Notorious Big Estate because we were doing business with them. And I wanted to be at Puffy's house, right? Because of his party then, like, it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't,
it's also a massive networking opportunity.
Yeah, it's like I wanted to be there, but instead we went to this rave, this Carl Cox rave in Los Angeles. And because, you know, she was one of the people that got me into like house music and, you know, started the whole Biggie project. And we were going to go to the Carl Cox rave. And then afterwards, cause they said it was going to be an all nighter. We were going to go over to Diddy's house. But as soon as the Carl Cox show ended, the Carl Cox rave, I was texting both of them, sending a message to their Instagram, and they didn't answer. It was an unseen, and we didn't see him until the next day. And they had said, you know, they had been at Puffy's house. He takes the phones away. Sorry about that. You know, that we could go again some other time, right? But we had left and went back to Louisville. If we would have stayed for another week, I would have probably went to two or three Diddy parties because they were always going. And right. This is Notorious Big Son, you know, who, as we know, is Puffy's. Like, a lot of people have said this, that Puffy, that Notorious Big was gonna leave Bad Boy. And that's just not true, because they're confusing that with Tupac. I don't know if Tupac was going to leave Death Row, but from his own words, Biggie, his last single before he died, Hypnotize, he says, me and Puff close like Starsky and Hutch. And he's always talking about how close him and Diddy were, right? Like, there's no sign of him leaving. And talking to his son, he was like, that was like his best friend. And CJ Wallace calls Jay-Z his uncle and Diddy like his second father. behind Todd Rousseau. So once again, it's that circle that I've been exposed to of the Diddy, Jay-Z circle of Biggie. So yeah, CJ Wallace, he would always tell me, yeah, we bring, you know, we get the DMT, we get the, you know, the ketamine, the K, they always call it K, you know, the K, the DMT, he's real, Diddy was real big into psychedelics like mushrooms, and they were growing cannabis with the Think Big and Frank White initiative. You can read all that online about Willie Mac and CJ Wallace. And while they were growing the cannabis, they're also growing the mushrooms and, you know, making those type of things. But they were like, they were doing all that, so much of that for Diddy. And Diddy was behind their operation. You know, there's no Biggie without Diddy, and there's no Diddy without Biggie. So people have got to really look into the relationship of Biggie's son, CJ Wallace, and Diddy.
You know, the only reason I believe that people are saying that Biggie wanted to leave Diddy was because, one, that Diddy robbed them of his publishing, correct? And two, it's because of Gene Deal, Diddy's bodyguard and essentially mm-hmm. Biggie's bodyguard at the moment. He's the one that claimed that Biggie showed them a record deal with a different record label that was worth like $30 or $40 million, and they wanted Biggie to essentially like cut off Diddy and move to that label. So that's what they're assuming. That's why they're even saying Jaguar Wright believes that Diddy had Biggie taken out. Mm. Now, who knows? I don't know. In my opinion,
Biggie's mom, Valletta, also thinks that.
Yeah, and the only reason why I'll say it makes sense is because Biggie made a lot of money. I mean, not Biggie. Diddy made a lot of money after Biggie passed. It's the right. same thing with like Juice WRLD and Bibby. After Juice WRLD passed away, this guy made three times the amount of money. And you can answer, you know a little bit about the music industry, probably more than me. For example, when an artist first signs, they usually get a bad deal, correct?
Correct.
Their first signing. And then after they get a little leverage, they'll get a better deal. But if you're an independent label and a major label reaches out to you, they're going to most likely offer you more than what the independent label could offer you. And you'll usually go with the major label. Correct. You know, you'll lose that artist. They rob you of that artist. And essentially, that's what people are saying that they were going to do with Biggie. And because Biggie passed away, his mom continued signing over with Diddy, because that's who he was working with at the time. It's easier to deal with the parents, you know?
Right.
You get them to sign a few papers, you give them some money, and they just go on their way.
Right.
And that's probably possibly the reason, but I see your point. Biggie and Diddy never appeared to be enemies or appeared that they were having any disagreements when they were around.
That's correct.
But you wouldn't say, like, would you say that Biggie's son is hosting like these freak off parties possibly? Have you heard of anything like that?
They were definitely doing parties, and they were definitely involved with, Diddy's sons for sure.
Okay.
But were they freak offs? I don't know. Like at that time, like I said, you know, we just felt like the place to be. Like I wanted to go to Puffy's house. Like Puffy supported the song, you know, and was very supportive of us doing a house project of the Notorious B.I.G. He thought it was a brilliant idea because we just done Eric B. and Rakim. And at that time, he still pretty much was the controlling entity had the most shares of Biggie's catalog and his publishing. So he was excited. And the fact that he was in house music and he loved doing house music and ketamine and that whole culture. So he was excited about us doing that project until he heard it. And then was like, you guys got to, you know, do ketamine and party and all that stuff. And when we went out to LA, now with all these things that have happened, I wish that we would have been there, because I'm the type of person that I would have just like not watched, not like Jay-Z watches his wife and not like Diddy watches his people, but I would have just observed and watched to see like how wicked this was. I would have loved to seen it, because I would have noticed, right? You know, that something was going on.
All right. So,
but listen, during the whole pandemic, like when I was doing the project, yo, you got to come to Puffs. You got to come to Puffs. Yo, it's going down. Oh, if you were at Puffs, like they were going there. CJ Wallace and Willie Mac was going there all the time when Diddy was in LA.
Anything else that you want to add before we wrap this up?
No, that's it, man. Whatever, you know, if you're good, I'm good. And I really appreciate your time. And I really appreciate, you know, you speaking your truth and exposing these things. So I'm always available for you, and it's just an honor to really, you know, talk to you and do this with you.
I appreciate you too, man. And it's an honor talking to you. I respect the fact that you're not afraid to come on this platform and, you know, say these things that other people would be terrified to say. They don't want to lose their connections, or they don't want to get blackballed, but you know, you're moving with God and you're doing the right things.
Right. I agree.
All right, man. I appreciate you talking to me. Well, that's it for this one. I appreciate you guys for watching to the end, and I'll see you guys in the next one.